And we're back on Big Board Sports Week 1 of the NFL season that starts this week, Thursday. The Dallas Cowboys at Philadelphia. And then everyone ready to roll for Sunday and Monday Night Football. And that means it's go time for our good friend Andrew Catalan, my former colleague at WNYT for 10 years and now longtime CBS Sports announcer, play-by-play voice for college basketball, for golf, and now a whole season of NFL coming at you starting on Sunday. Andrew.
Hey, Raj. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
You know, I saw that picture of you dropping your son off at college, and I was wondering if that was one of those AI things, because that doesn't seem possible.
It was. Brady's playing college football freshman at Ithaca.
That's crazy.
He's
That's
a bomber.
Crazy.
Yeah. No, that
good
those,
for him.
Those things never get easy, dropping your kid off at college.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. You've been through it a few times.
I've been
now.
Through
it's
it.
Crazy. Everybody's off the payroll now.
Yeah. We're empty nesters, my friend. We are empty nesters. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's what we are. And I did I miss you in Saratoga? Did you get a chance to pop up there this year?
You did. Unfortunately, we snuck up just really quick in late July. I was hoping to make a return trip in August, but then the preseason with the Bills kind of got me twisted around a little bit.
Yep.
So I got to get a rain check with you. But it was awesome. I mean, the spa is still an amazing place, and it was great to be up there.
And where do you end up sitting?
I went twice. I went in the backyard with my son, which was fun.
Yeah.
And then we got the fancy seats with a friend and the wives the next day. So
gotcha.
I kind of tasted a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to slice up Saratoga. They had a great meet again. And actually, it was 49 days of racing this year because of the Belmont Stakes and the 4th of July. So it was all total an extra 9 days of racing, and it's going to be the same for next year. So. Always a fun time, and now once that ends, it's go time for football, college football underway, high school football season starts this Friday night, NFL starts, and you're going to be on the road at Indy, right? You got the Dolphins at the Colts in week one.
Yeah, just finished up my 10th preseason with Steve Tasker and the Bills, which was a lot of fun, and to watch him on Hard Knocks, too, has been a cool summer with that, but now away we go, and we know our first three games, and I open up, as you said, with Miami at Indianapolis. I actually have Miami the first 2 weeks. Mm. They host the Patriots in week two, so I'll go down to Miami for the second week, and you know, a guy I'm excited to talk to, Raj, is Anthony Weaver. I mean, he's really done a great job in his coaching career, defensive coordinator for Miami, and you see so many of these offensive guys getting hired as head coaches. I think Anthony is really the next defensive guy in line, and I'm rooting for him, as we all know, from Saratoga, and such a great guy. Looking forward to chatting with him this weekend when Miami arrives in Indianapolis. But I think that he's a guy. Now, their defense is a little strange. They got guys that can get after the quarterback, but their secondary is very thin based on injuries. So, you know, for his sake, I hope he has a good year, because I could definitely see him becoming a head coach in the NFL one day soon.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's been close. You know, we have close contact with several people that are close to Anthony, and we stay in touch, and we've had him on the show, and I've texted back and forth with him. But I think the last couple of years in the off season, he's been close, and one of these off seasons, he's going to land a head coaching job. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Rooting for him. He's such a great guy, and it'll be interesting to see with, you know, Miami and Tyreek Hill. He hasn't really practiced much, how he can get back on the same page with Tua. And then, obviously, the Colts quarterback now is a guy that you know well, and
yeah,
Giants fans know well, and Daniel Jones. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
No doubt. And you know what? Speaking of D coordinators, the other local tie is Jeff Hafley with the Green Bay Packers. He went to Siena College, and then
yep,
he coached under Bob Ford at the University of Albany before, I think, going to – he was at Pitt – he was the head coach at BC, and now this is year number two for Jeff Hafley in Green Bay, and he lands Micah Parsons now. So
yeah, pretty nice Christmas present that he got in late August.
No question about it. No doubt. All right. So, and the Dolphins head coach a little bit on the hot seat here. Is that fair or no?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that you know, a disappointing season last year, a lot of high expectations. Just hasn't fired for them. They still haven't won a playoff game, Miami, since 2000, which is just crazy that it's been that long for such a storied franchise. So I think there is a lot of pressure, especially on the GM and the head coach. They've beefed up their offensive line, which is always the big question with Miami, trying to keep Tua healthy and upright. I mentioned their defensive struggles, and it'll be interesting to follow them the first couple of weeks on the road in Indianapolis, where Jim Irsay passed. I think it'll be an emotionally charged crowd there for the Colts, and then at home against New England and Mike Vrabel in week two. So looking forward to that. And then I travel to Seattle week three. The Seahawks host the Saints, and I've got a new partner this year. I'm back with Jason McCourty, looking forward to being with him, and Charles Davis is going to join our crew this year for a three-man booth, and it'll be just a one-year deal with Charles because he is going to take over for Gary Danielson on college football on CBS next year, so it'll be the three of us just for the year, and I'm excited to get it going.
We're talking with the great Andrew Catalan of CBS Sports here on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and of course the free 104.5 The Team app. Andrew, this Dolphins-Colts game, you mentioned the Dolphins side of things. How about the Colts and Daniel Jones? I mean, starting quarterback of the Giants, now with the Colts. But I want to ask you specifically about the offense in the Colts with Jonathan Taylor, you know, a guy who's had some injuries. We know the hype around Tyler Warren as well. What do you make of the weapons that Daniel Jones will have on this Colts offense and how he'll hopefully utilize them in week one?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think it's kind of a wait and see. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, not everyone in Indianapolis is so happy with this decision in terms of the fans. I mean, they want Anthony Richardson to be the quarterback. And, you know, what I'm curious to see is if Daniel Jones struggles out of the gate, you know, what does the crowd do? I think that's kind of something that he's got to face as well. Now, I thought Daniel Jones, while forget about his play on the field, I thought he handled himself well off the field in New York. So I think he's got the right makeup to handle adversity because he already went through that. But yeah, he's going to need some of these guys. I mean, the tight end Warren you mentioned is a great player, it seems. Pittman, Downs, they've got some receivers. They've got some weapons. Jonathan Taylor in the run game. And Shane Steichen calls the plays, and I think he does a good job, but he's kind of under fire as well, too. You got two head coaches in this game that have to have big years. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Jones can kind of step in after he went to Minnesota for the end of last year, reclaims a starter's job. Can he get it rolling early? Because if he struggles early, I would question how quickly the fans will turn and want Richardson back in there.
Yeah, I'm sure pretty quickly. How about New England? You got them in week two against Miami, a Patriots team with a new coach in Mike Vrabel. A lot of people think that's going to be a big turnaround for the Patriots. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, I can see that. You know, I called a lot of Titans games when Mike Vrabel was the head coach in Tennessee. And, you know, we've heard this summer a couple of interactions with reporters and a little testy, and he can be like that. But I'll say this, the players love him, and I think he's a really good coach. So I would expect that he'll reset that culture, he'll put the standard high, and I think that this is a very improved ball club with a second-year quarterback in Drake May. Now, I don't know if they have enough to catch the Bills in the AFC East, but I would expect an improved team that will fight and play hard for Mike Vrabel, and I think they'll be fun to watch this year. I really do.
Andrew, is this the year, this is an age-old question at this point, that the Buffalo Bills can finally get over the hump? I mean, they're favorites on paper. We know the schedule is always subject to change, right? In almost every game, including Baltimore by just a point and a half on Sunday night. You know, Josh Allen's back, as long as he's healthy, a quarterback. What do you expect for the Bills this season?
Yeah, I spent all the month of August with them calling their preseason games, and good feel for, you know, what they do. And a lot of it looks the same. I mean, offensively, I feel like a lot of it is going to look similar to the past. And obviously, all starts with Josh. I think the question is defensively. I look at that cornerback position. You know, Tre'Davious White is back in the mix. He got banged up late in training camp. Not 100% and has struggled, let's be honest, the last couple of years. They had drafted Maxwell Hairston, you know, in the first round, but he got injured and is now on IR for the first four games. I thought they had really pegged him in to start opposite Christian Benford, but they're going to have to wait on that. So how that secondary, you know, the safety position, Cole Bishop is a guy that was hurt. They want him to start. Can he get, you know, back in the mix quickly? I think there's some questions in the back end of that secondary. But if they hold up, I think they have guys that can get after the quarterback. They brought in Joey Bosa. We know what Greg Rousseau can do. I think it's going to be a really good team again. I think it's a really tough game out of the gate. I really do. I mean, I think that Baltimore, after what happened in the playoffs last year, is going to have a lot of, you know, revenge on their mind. I think that's a great game. I can't wait to watch it. I just feel like that could be a tough one for Buffalo. But you look at their schedule, four of their first five games are at home. And look, they still have Josh Allen. I mean, he's Superman. He's unbelievable. And, you know, signed James Cook. That was a big part of the month, getting that done, making him happy, and they did that. I think it's going to be a really good team again, a team that should compete for home field advantage in the playoffs. And if they do get that one seed and they can keep home field in the last year in that stadium, I think it could be really special in Buffalo.
Andrew, the top team here, just because they trained here for 16 years, there's a lot of Giants fans in the 5-1-8. We give them probably more love than any. But, I mean, three wins last year, but you look at what they've done defensively, and then even offensively with Russell Wilson, and they love the rookie quarterback from Ole Miss and Jackson. I think they are going to be much improved. I don't know how many more wins than three, but I could see a 6 or 7 win season out of the Giants.
Yeah, I agree with you, Raj. I think the feeling around Brian Daboll and Joe Shane is a little different right now than it was this time a year ago, and for good reason. I mean, they had a rough year. The off-season hard knocks did them no favors. I think it was really close to whether or not they'd come back, and I think the Giants made the right move in giving Daboll another year and keeping Joe Shane around, and I think they had a really good off-season. I mean, people forget about Joe Shane's draft class a year ago. I mean, there were some really good impact defenders that he drafted. Now, a couple of them got banged up last year, but I really think, as you said, Raj, this defense is going to be really good. And, you know, Russell Wilson brings a different element of quarterback. And then, you know, you saw what Dart did in the preseason, and that's why I think there's a lot of optimism around the Giants. Now, the division is still really good. They're not as good as the Eagles. They're not as good as the Commanders. But I would expect them to win more games than they did last year. And I think Giants fans at the end of the year will have a really good feeling going into next year based on what happens this year.
How about the Jets and a new coach that people seem to be pretty high on in Aaron Glenn? Just changed the climate about the, I think there'll be a better coach team. How many wins does that make? I don't know, but, and I'm not huge Justin Fields guy in terms of throwing the football. I think he can run it well. But the Jets might be a team that'll win maybe a few more games than they did a year ago as well.
Yeah, I think that Glenn has brought in the right mentality and the right attitude. I still think in this league and for the Jets, it's going to come down to quarterback play, and I'm with you. It's still, you know, still a little iffy on Justin Fields. I think he's got a great opportunity to go prove himself and to show why he was a first-round pick and to really establish himself as a quarterback here. I think it's a good match in the offseason. If you told me the Jets and Justin Fields, I think it makes sense. But now it's time to go prove it. And, you know, they have some really good pieces. They should be better. I still think, as we discussed earlier, that division is improved with New England. But could they beat out Miami? Could they pick off some teams here and there? Yeah, I agree. And I think it'll be fun to watch Aaron Glenn and to see what he can do now as the head coach.
Here we go, Andrew, off and running, man. Look forward to a great season. I hope you have a great season with your partner there, and I'm sure we'll get back in touch down the road, but always a pleasure to have you on, my friend.
Yeah, I'd love it. Thanks so much, Raj. Great talking to you. Good luck to Ithaca.
Thank you. I'll keep you posted.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Catalan, my 10-year partner at WNYT. Hard to believe that. He was alongside me for 10 years. That's a long run. And Ashley Miller was alongside me for a long time. And Chris Honorato was in there a long time. And then now we have a new weekend sports anchor who made his debut on Sunday, did a tremendous job. If you get a chance to watch our weekends, you'll see Jack Keys, who just graduated from the University of Georgia and is from Long Island. He is our new guy in our sports department. Glad to have him aboard. But, yeah, Andrew just went on, and he has done big things, and now one of the top play-by-play announcers in the CBS Sports panel. I mean, you look at their lineup, and he's right near – he's right under Jim Nance. And I know in golf, he's right under Jim Nance.
Like, oh, yeah.
He's the next Jim Nance when it comes to play-by-play in golf. All right, we are back on Big Board Sports. Eric Hubbs will join us at 11:30 on the state of the New York Yankees as they open up a series against the Houston Astros tonight. But first, let's wrap up Saratoga. The meet ended yesterday. John Preachy has been with us all meet long on Fridays. And, of course, you say the name John Preachy, you go WNYT racing analyst and the best bet every night. Sponsored this year by Mohawk Honda on News Channel 13. And what great work he did all year. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Roger. How are you? I'm just sitting here taking a deep breath. Man, that's some treadmill, Saratoga.
No doubt. And really 49 days this year when you go back to the Belmont and then the 4th of July Festival. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot, and I think we'll have to run it back again next year. Might not be exactly the setup the same way because Labor Day is a little bit later. But, yeah, no, it's a long haul. It's a long meet. It's over. What drama? I mean, I'm reading your column here. You're talking about the jockeys and Jose and Irad and how good that jockey race is. But let me just start with the training title that took us right down to the final race. Chad Brown wins the final race of the day to tie Todd Pletcher. Doesn't get much better than that.
No, it does not. I guess it's the second time this century we've had a tie in Saratoga. And I think it was Linda Rice who tied Chad Brown when they shared leading trainer honors. But how do you get more dramatic than yesterday? Todd wins two, including an explosive race from Ned Toffey. Or Ted Naffi, should say, got confused between his real name and the horse's name, but a commanding 8.5 length win in the hopeful. Just speaking of that for a moment. Oh yeah, well, getting back to your original question, So Todd's one behind. He ties it in the second race. He goes ahead with that outstanding victory in the hopeful, the penultimate race of the day, and would you know it, Chad comes back last chance saloon, and he and his frequent rider Flavien Prat win the finale, and it gets tied at two. It was an amazing trainer's race. Just like it was an exciting jockey's race as well.
Yeah, no question. I mean, there are some great storylines. And one that you also mentioned in your column here with HorseRaceInsider.com, you mentioned Todd, mentioned Chad, but I mean, Christophe Clement with losing his father, you know, early in this meet, and now, you know, I thought he had a tremendous meet, Christophe Clement, all things considered, and his, as you pointed out, in his first full job, first year on the job as a head trainer, couldn't have asked for much more from Christophe Clement.
Well, Christophe was the dad.
Yeah, Miguel.
Miguel is the son.
Yeah.
But I want to tell you something. That was the story that brought tears to my eyes on many occasions as I was watching the races. Not only to win 18 races, I mean, are you kidding me? In your first year as full trainer, 18 races at Saratoga? It's almost like one every other day. It's outstanding. I think four stakes are numbered among those. Mm-hmm. He broke maidens. He won races on turf and on dirt. And under those circumstances, it was just remarkable. And I loved his dad on a personal level. I don't even know Miguel that well, but when he comes down here this winter, I'll be sure to look him up.
Yeah, for sure, John. I mean, he's a great guy. I've talked to Miguel several times, but really got to know, you know, from being in the winner's circle and covering the races, Christophe was just a great man. And when he passed, There was a lot of heavy hearts and then a lot of rooting for his son, Miguel. And I loved it every time he won a race. And as you pointed out, he won a lot of them. And then that jockey colony, I mean, I would have liked to have seen Jose not go off to Kentucky. It would have been maybe even more interesting with his brother, Irad Ortiz Jr. But those two, I mean, there were plenty others, but those two were lights out all year.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, and the fact that they can both wind up with over 50 winners at the meet. And, yeah, well, you know, Jose was quoted as, well, you know, I won't be here Thursday. That was early last week. And Thursday was the day he went for opening day at Kentucky Downs. He said, you have to take care of business. And did he? He won four races at Kentucky Downs that day, including three stakes. Jose is having an amazing year. And, you know, with the riding titles that he's earned throughout this year and the high level of victories, riding at a level which was always great, but now he really came into his own. It's like he's matured, he's grown up. He's in the conversation for Eclipse winning jockey this year. Obviously, without any injuries getting in the way and so forth. And speaking of that, that was another amazing story, but one you don't like to see. I mean, on Jockey Club Gold Cup Day, we witnessed like the miracle at the Spa. I mean, when not only is Irad such a great rider, but when he got knocked off his horse, he held on to the reins of the rival beside him and tried to remount his horse. I mean, how do you even do things like that while you're in the air falling down? I think because you don't want to be in mid-pack and there are trailing horses behind you. And wouldn't you know that it was Sierra Leone who clipped him. And I saw that, and the first time I saw that, I mean, I, like, yelled, ouch, because that injury could have been a lot worse. I noticed that that Sierra Leone, I think it was his right hind leg that clipped. That clipped Irad, and I was, it looked devastating, and everybody knew it. I mean, the talent on Saratoga Live, they talked about it too, and you can tell why they didn't belabor the drama or the seriousness of what that could have been.
Yeah, no doubt. And fortunately, I think Irad Ortiz came back and raced the next day. In fact, I think I'm pretty sure he did race the next day. So he ended up going to Albany Med. He had the ribs and hand injury, but fortunately, thank God that, you know, he is okay, because that could have been a whole lot worse. And then, you know, you had Antiquarian winning, but it was all, I felt bad for that the handlers of Antiquarian, because the spill at the beginning and Mindframe running that race without a jockey kind of was the headline over the winning race, you know, the winning horse in that race.
Yeah, it really was. An irony of ironies, Antiquarian was one of those forces that brought, in fact, Antiquarian actually had a real good shot in the race, and to lose Mindframe and win it to Antiquarian, what stories that got lost there was Todd didn't get necessarily the credit that he deserved for developing this horse. This horse came out of nowhere,
yeah,
and he was lightly raced, and for him to put him in the race, he knew that he had a live mount there. This horse definitely was bred to go a mile and a quarter. He went a mile and a quarter. He's dangerous because he has that tactical speed, and now he wins in a win and you're in. And he's in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And wouldn't that be something? But there was so much human drama going on. Just continuing with the jockeys theme, I mean, Kendrick just raised his game to an elite level. Yes, unfortunately, he made a mistake, a large contributor to the accident, and he got 5 days from the stewards because of that ride. But again, he raises his game to an elite level, wound up fifth in the standings with 29 wins. He's a very confident guy. And if you told him, well, you're going to be the fifth leading rider at this meeting, at the beginning of the meeting, not even he would have believed it. Ricardo Santana and Joel Rosario. Rosario's was in a deep slump for a fairly long period of time. I mean, I'll call it 6 months. I mean, it's just from memory. But he raised his game to reignite. He reignited his career. I mean, he wound up third in the standings. He wound up fourth in the standings. And Santana, who lost his first call status with Steve Asmussen, he rode a lot of winners in Kentucky, but he wasn't as dominant as he was when he was riding almost exclusively for Steve Asmussen. And to come back and win 38 races at this meet, I mean, are you kidding me? He was fantastic. And now he's like back. So you have these two legitimate elite level riders back having the status that they've earned throughout their careers.
No doubt, John. And that colonial, that jockey colonial, we talk about it every year at the beginning, and it never disappoints. The drama with the training, and then Sovereignty doing what Sovereignty did all meet. There was just, you know, a plethora of great stories once again at Saratoga to wrap things up. And now we'll move on, and the countdown to next year already, John Preachy.
It happens every day after Labor Day each year, doesn't it?
It sure does. And by the way, great job with your Mohawk Honda Best Bet and all of your insight on our Friday shows throughout the meet. Great work.
Yeah, we had, we had what I thought was a really good meet. Could have been better. I wish I had ended the meet with a winner. But that horse was pretty disappointing yesterday. But in all, I think it was 28 out of 39 exacta finishers. That's win and second place finishers. I mean, that's what I guess I'm most proud of.
Yeah.
The fact that we gave people a run for their money almost every day.
For sure. And the exotics really were a big hit with our viewers, because not only is it, you know, the one pick to win, but then you got two others to write down to have some fun with. And a lot of those did hit the board, or in some cases won the race. So nice work, Mr. Preachy. I'll be in touch. And thanks for all you do. This was, 39 years. Next year will be number 40.
Your mouth to God's ears. Thanks very much for the opportunity, Roger.
You got it, John.
It was always appreciated from day one.
Absolutely. My good friend, John Preachy, WNYT, longtime racing analyst, completes his 39th year with us. He's been riding professionally for horse racing since 1977.
It's incredible.
Seven.
Yeah.
That's a long run.
I would say so. Yeah.
And a great run. The man really knows his stuff, as you probably can tell by listening to John Preachy. And we're back on Big Board Sports. Yankees have a interesting few series coming up. Let's preview them with Eric Cubs from Barstool Yankees. Been with us many, many times during the course of this long season that has hit the stretch run of the regular season. Hubs, it's Roger and MJ up in Albany, New York. How are you, Eric?
What's going on, boys? This is the season. It all begins right now. If you've tuned out the last few months, get back in. It all really matters starting tonight.
So what's your mindset here? It's been a season where, you know, they have struggled against some of the better teams. They have certainly been able to beat the teams that you think they should be. They've done that. Now what do you think is going to happen here with Houston and Toronto back to back?
I don't know. I was here a few weeks ago getting ready for this Red Sox series. They're going to that, firing in all cylinders against bad teams, doing what they need to do, and they completely let me down and honestly left me pretty, pretty sad. They're doing the same thing again. You know, they handled their business against the Nats and White Sox. Would have loved to finish it off on Sunday with a sweep. It's okay. For the most part, really, really good stretch here. Playing good ball. Judge hitting the ball again. Cam Schlueter's really come on here. Max Fried with a few good starts in a row. We'll see, tonight he gets the ball. Fernando Cruz back. So Stan's still healthy. Stan's still hitting. So you're feeling as good as you could going into this, but all season long, we beat these teams. So is it all going to change now? Then I'm all on board. I'm just proceeding with caution is kind of the best way I can say it. Because we literally just did this. So, maybe they caught fire and maybe they snapped out of it. Baseball is ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys, and the Yankees certainly have the extreme of that. But let's just hope that they've truly turned it around and they show it tonight.
Yeah, and let's see what happens tonight with Fried, who's had a couple of promising outings. He had that great start, and then whatever slump he hit for whatever reasons, whether the blister was bothering him, who knows what it was. But he seems to be back, and you'd have to say you're putting the ball in your ace's hand tonight against Valdez to try to get this series off to a good start.
Yeah, 100%. Valdez has not been as sharp as we've kind of known to be of the last few months himself. So, they hit lefties. They're going to have Stanton in there tonight. I love that. A few days ago, Boone said they were not going to play him in the outfield in Houston. They have changed their mind. Go figure. Play your best players in the most important games. Shocker that they're actually doing that. But he's playing left. It's a short left field. Do your best out there. I feel like overall, he's been fine. In left field, which is all he can ask for, with his physical limitations at this point. As for Fried, it's looked really good the last two starts. One was against Boston, so it's not just against cupcakes. They didn't win that game; they didn't score for him at all. But this is how he should be pitching. If he took a few months off and he's figuring out now, fine by me. Let's get it rolling tonight. You're the ace of the team. Please, please throw up zeros tonight.
We are talking with our guy Eric Hubbs from Barstool Sports, covers the New York Yankees, friend of the show, friend of the station here on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Hubbs, how about, you mentioned him earlier, wanted to follow up with you about Cam Schlueter. Safe to say, recently he's borderline been the Yankees' best starting pitcher. I know Rodon's had pieced together some several back-to-back good starts as well. But Schlueter, for a young guy, has a lot of poise, a lot of confidence. What have you made early impressions of Schlueter, and do you expect him to continue it now with, like you said, the most important part of the season?
Yeah, I mean, outside of Stanton being this guy for a few months, Cam Schlueter is the biggest surprise of the season. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say Ben Rice too, but Schlueter has been incredible. His fastball is eye popping. He's seemingly getting control under him with more and more starts. The breaking ball, or I guess they call it a cutter. It looks like more of a slider, but it's nasty. It's 92 and it dives, and guys can't figure it out. And he's got this presence on the mound. He's very calm, and it's exciting because he wasn't like a top prospect by any means. He had good strikeout numbers in the minors, and it was like, hey, let's give this guy a shot. Especially when Clark goes down, that's what pulled the trigger there. But he's been everything and more, and he gives you, some hope, some real hope for the future. Where you throw in that guy in a rotation with Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, and Carlos Rodon, and maybe Clark Schmidt, or if they go add a guy or whatever. But Schlueter's been awesome. He hasn't faced the stiffest of competition lately. He will get that test in the next 2 weeks for certain. And then we'll see where he's at. Luis Hill also in that rotation. I just completely forgot him. Right now in my mind, I want him pitching game three, if not even maybe game two of a playoff series. Cam's been special. It's a very nice surprise. It's a fun surprise too, because of the triple digits he constantly hits that pops. We don't have too many of those guys, especially starters. So I am very, very excited to see him pitch against these teams in the next 2 weeks.
And then Aaron Judge seems to be in a nice little. He was in a bit of a slump, right? But he seems to be Certainly hitting the heck out of the ball right now and hitting home runs, and maybe that's a good sign moving forward into the playoffs where we know he hasn't performed at the level that we all think he should or he wants to, but maybe Judge is onto something here at the end of this season into the postseason.
Yeah, he was brutal in the Red Sox series. Just gave you a complete zero. Had been bad for about a month plus, and it all kind of synced up with the injury. Boone claims he's very close to playing the outfield. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, it'd be great because it gives them more flexibility, and Stanton can play every day. But yeah, Judge has got to be Judge. No matter what happens with Cam Schiller or Luis Hill or Ben Rice, if Aaron Judge is an Aaron Judge, they don't have a chance of winning anything. So 99's got to be online here. The swings will look better, more power for sure. Maybe that injury, if it was hampering him, is subsiding and he's allowed to do more, or it was just a timing thing. And I also threw this out there that being the DH, the everyday DH is a different level of hitting and different level of playing. Look at Rafael Devers; took him a little bit to get going as a DH, and now he's really mashing the ball. It's different when you're not playing the outfield; it throws you off your routine that you've had for years. So maybe that was part of it. Maybe it's getting used to that. But yeah, the Judge we've seen the last week is kind of what we want. He could still obviously be way better. He'll tell you that himself. If they're going to do anything in the next 2 weeks and into October, it's got to be him. So this has to be a massive stretch for him.
Hubs, you look at this Yankees-Astros series, starts the stretch of what, Astros, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Tigers. It's a big stretch here in September. Some good pitching matchups, including tonight with Freed going against Framber Valdez. How do you expect the Yankees-Astros, the rivalry and all the playoff history, and Houston's good again and probably going to be a playoff team with the Yankees could see. How do you expect this series to go here starting tonight?
I don't know, man. Is that a lame answer? But no. I don't know what version of this team we're going to see. I just don't, because they have not played well. Now, it's mainly been it has been the Astros, too. But, yeah, the Yankees, the Red Sox and Blue Jays have killed them. Maybe it's go time now, and they truly, it's all snapped in there, and they're ready to let it loose. And, hey, I feel good about tonight. We'll see the rest of the series and rest of these next 2 weeks. But let's start on a good foot tonight and absolutely rock Framber and have Max throw 6 shutout and get into that bullpen, which is going to be fully rested. They were off yesterday. Aaron Boone is at the UNC game. Let's get it going tonight on the right foot and really kick off this sprint to the finish. They're two and a half back of the division. And that's what I want right now. I don't want to settle for a wild card spot where you're playing that first week, the first three games. I don't want that. I want the division. I want to have a bye. My first game I want to be on Saturday. Let's get it going on the right foot, please.
Here we go. You got it, Eric. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us here for a few minutes on ESPN Radio in Albany.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Eric Hubbs, Barstool Sports, covering the New York Yankees. All right, hour number 3 on a Tuesday. Nice to have you with us coming out of the holiday weekend. It's Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio, and a lot of college football that concluded last night with that North Carolina TCU blowout. And let's welcome Ryan McGee, the ESPN senior.com writer from ESPN, just does a tremendous job, and we enjoy his radio show in the mornings on Saturdays, and haven't had him on in a little while, so what a great timing coming out of probably one of the better opening weekends we've had matchup-wise in a while in college football. Ryan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm exhausted for all the right reasons because, we played college football all the way up until, midnight Eastern on Monday night, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with the most recent in my mind right now, and looking forward on a day off last night to sit down at 8 o'clock and watch North Carolina. How shocked were you at that final score of 48-14 for Bill Belichick's debut with the Tar Heels?
I wasn't. I mean, I grew up in North Carolina. This is what North Carolina football is. I wrote this column when they hired Belichick, which is the last time that North Carolina won a conference championship, Lawrence Taylor was playing linebacker. It's 1980. And, I've seen Mack Brown twice get North Carolina up to the edge of playing for a championship. And I've seen, some ridiculously talented players come in there. I mean, Larry Fedora took over as head coach. and they're scoring 50 points a game, and they're going to do everything. And within three, 4 years, he was gone and couldn't win. This is what they do. And so I am fascinated by this experiment for probably all of the wrong reasons, because I'm just – what I've said all along is I've been curious to see how in Chapel Hill they could take arguably the greatest football coach who's ever lived and turn that into a solid 7-win Duke's Mayo Bowl season. And now I don't even know if sure they're going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, so with what you saw last night and looking at the schedule, I mean, how many wins are realistic here for Bill Belichick and what, 70 new players that he brought in?
Yeah, and I think that the ACC is better than people realize, and I think it's full of a bunch of teams where, you know, there's a lot of teams that could be really good. I mean, listen, NC State in a rivalry game against East Carolina, you know, didn't look great, but it was a rivalry game. And Florida State suddenly looks like Florida State again. And Clemson, despite the fact that they're 0-1, they're going to be really good. So, yeah, I think that the road is tough. And it's going to be really interesting to see. We're going to find out if Bill Belichick cares. Like, that's the part the question I've had all along is he going to care enough and be passionate about this enough to put in the work that it's going to take? And it's not just about setting things up for his son, or it's not just about, you know, changing the way college football is run, which is what Michael Lombardi, his GM, keeps shouting at everybody. So it's going to be really interesting. So we're going to find out now if he really cares, because this is going to be hard. And I think a lot of these NFL guys come to college football and they think, well, I'll just be able to do whatever I want to do because I coached in the almighty NFL. Yeah. And so I get it. It's just a week, they're just 0-1. But it's going to be really, really interesting to see now if he cares enough to put in the work, because there's clearly a lot of work to do.
We're talking with the great Ryan McGee from ESPN, senior college football writer, host Marty and McGee can hear it on Saturday mornings here on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and, of course, the free 104.5 The Team app. Ryan, what did you make? Arch Mania, they call it in Texas nowadays, right? And that came to a halt on Saturday with Ohio State winning 14-7. What were some of your big takeaways in that defensive slugfest on Saturday for the big noon kickoff?
Well, I mean, I think that, and I got in trouble, you know, we're on the road with Marty McGee now every weekend for football season, and we were in Atlanta for Tennessee and for the Tennessee-Syracuse game, and then and they had doubleheader, South Carolina and Virginia Tech played on Sunday. And on Marty McGee on Saturday morning, I just said, listen, I have a huge question mark about every team that I looked at in the top 25. And for all the talk about Ohio State and all that, they're replacing 2/3 of their roster and, like, all of their offensive production. And so I had a question about them, but I said on the show, I go, I am rooting for Arch Manning because I know his family and I know him, and I believe that he could be really good. But going into that game on Saturday, he had thrown less than 100 collegiate passes. And you know, that's what he looked like. He looked like a kid that hadn't played very much. And so I when I said that, everybody got angry like it was blasphemous, but the reality is, that's a real football question, and I think it was answered that he's got a lot of work to do. And so, you know, unlike Belichick, I don't have any doubt that Arch Manning is going to put in the work, and I don't have any doubt that Steve Sarkisian is going to put in the work. But the reality is, Sark has lost 2 out of 3 games, or what 2 games in a row to the same team, and you know, made some really bad offensive decisions, you know, as a coach, going back to that 4th down in the semifinal game. So there's a lot of work to do. And the good news is for us is that I think this might lead to chaos. Like, I'm looking at the top 25 that we had with the question marks that we had, and now looking at the results that we had in week 1, and I think we have a chance to perhaps have like a 2007 level of no one's going to know what the hell is going on every Saturday. And as a sports writer, I'm all about that.
You watched, you know, there was a lot of Syracuse alum up here, Ryan. What and high hopes with Fran Brown and what he did last year. And there were some that thought they could beat Tennessee. What did you see out of the Orange?
Well, I said that prior to the game. Well, those Tennessee fans behind us live, and you guys know I went to Tennessee. And I said, listen, y'all acting like this game's a bye, and it's not. You know, I went back to 1998. when it was, Peyton Manning was gone from Tennessee, and the 1998 national championship year for Tennessee, people forget, they won by a point against Donovan McNabb in the Carrier Dome with T. Martin at quarterback. And so I kept saying, don't act like this is some bye week. But the reality is Syracuse is replacing so much. But I think they're going to be fine. And I think the fact that going back to what we said about the ACC, you know, the middle is kind of a mess. And I think that plays into your hands if you're Syracuse. And so now I think what they're doing there is they're setting themselves up for the long haul. And I think everybody should be encouraged with that. But the football reality was, if you looked at everything they had to replace for all the headlines about Tennessee's got to replace a quarterback and Tennessee's got to replace a running back and all those things, Syracuse had to replace a lot more than that. So I thought, all things considered, I didn't think they're going to win the game. But for them to I thought you could walk away feeling better about that than I probably thought you were going to when the game started.
Fair enough. What of the big matchups, and there were a bunch of them, is there one that really surprised you, caught you off guard? I mean, how about Florida State taking down Alabama in a big way?
No, that was it. That was the one. And it wasn't just that Florida State won the game. Alabama just looked completely discombobulated. And, you know, what first of all, I love Kalen DeBoer. I think Kalen DeBoer is a great guy, but I think that Kalen DeBoer is going to do great at wherever he goes next because you can feel it in Tuscaloosa already. I don't believe he's on the hot seat this year, but he might be, and that certainly didn't help. Because listen, he's got his offensive coordinator, who went and spent a year in the NFL and is back now. You know, I thought Jalen Milroe was very overrated, and so now you have a quarterback who's waited patiently and supposedly fits the system that, you know, that they used at Washington to get to the national championship game just 2 years ago. And so I want it to work for Kalen DeBoer, but I think the reality is, and if you know your history of football, you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy, but you can't turn the job down. And so, you know, if he has another 7-8 win, you know, December 30th bowl season, then I think that next year might be his last year. But again, he might turn around, and those guys are smart. But Florida State won two games last year, and they all of a sudden look like a college football playoff contender, and just simply because Alabama couldn't get out of their own way.
Ryan, how about Notre Dame-Miami, the nightcap on Sunday? C.J. Carr, the true freshman, coming in. I thought it was solid, but, you know, they showed some freshman mistakes, but really was confident and played better than I honestly thought he was going to overall in the game. But Carson back in Miami looked really good, and nice to see Mario Cristobal winning a close game. As you mentioned, another team out of the already loaded ACC in Miami. What did you make of the Hurricanes being able to win at home and a good one against Notre Dame?
Well, I like Carson. You know, I got to know Carson when he was at Georgia. I think that it was a smart move by him because it was, you know, it felt like he lost his team. I was standing on the sideline at the SEC championship game when he was hurt, and they bring in, you know, this amazing story, this walk-on local kid, whatever, who's now the quarterback at Georgia, and you could feel the entire sideline change. So what he did was the right move. And so I like Carson. You know, I don't root for teams, but I do root for players. And I want to see him succeed, and I was glad to see him get that start. But, yeah, if you're Notre Dame, I mean, again, they're replacing so much. And I think we just take that for granted. Because a team played for a national championship or because they made the playoff, yeah, you know, Boise State, you know, Notre Dame, Alabama, you just plug them in to that top 10 or to that top 25. And so the reality is, they're building for the long term, and they got a lot of work to do. And yeah, they're young. But I tell you this, they don't need to go to Miami anymore. Because even as Miami has struggled, you know, over the last 20 years, Notre Dame can't win down there. And so I believe I'd start scheduling them in South Bend whenever I could.
Ryan, where are you guys headed this week? I mean, it's such a big opening weekend. Where are you headed this weekend?
We're going to the Border War. We're going to Mizzou, Kansas and Missouri. In fact, I'm sitting here writing an essay for College Game Day when you guys called about the history of this. And this is the most college football thing ever, is that, like, the Kansas Jayhawks, that mascot comes from the nickname they gave the soldiers that were tasked with keeping the people from Missouri from invading Kansas. Then the Tigers, that comes from the people, the soldiers that were charged with defending Columbia, Missouri, from the Jayhawkers. that's where the football rivalry came from. I mean, that's unbelievable. And Eli Drinkwitz could not possibly be talking more smack about Kansas right now. So this game hadn't been played in almost a decade and a half, and now it's back, and I'm excited to go there and, you know, let all his Missouri journalism students tell me how smart they are.
Well, I did not know what you just said, so that's you're educating us here with what you're throwing out there. Look forward to reading your column on that, and have a great road trip. And, Ryan, always great to have you on Big Board Sports here in Albany, New York.
All right, boys, appreciate it.
Thanks,
Take
Ryan.
Care. That's Ryan McGee on Little College Football. What a weekend it was.